This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Lindy Chamberlain-Creighton, Bruce and Denise Morecambe, Rosie Batty, they were all ordinary people until their stories became tabloid targets. Dr. Fiona Reynolds has over 30 years' experience as a multimedia journalist working in the areas of print, radio, television, the digital space as well. She's worked on some of Australia's most infamous stories, and in her new podcast, Accidental Celebrity, Fiona gives listeners a powerful look into how individuals grapple with the media attention in their rise from anonymity to unenviable fame. Over six episodes, Dr. Fiona is joined by infamous guests discussing the human price of relentless media pursuits. Through the candid conversation, she discusses why people participate in media coverage well beyond their story breaking and gives us all a behind-the-scenes look at the wrestle for control as private lives become public property. Dr. Fiona Reynolds joins us now. Thanks for taking the time.
Hi, it's great to join you.
This is a fascinating subject that you're delving into, and I wonder, with your history in 30 years of working in media, this idea of making celebrities out of the faces involved in news stories, has that always been the way of it, or is it a relatively new thing to make these kind of accidental celebrities?
No, we in the media have been doing that for a very long time. When you look at it, we've got Lindy Chamberlain-Creighton. It would be at the top of the hierarchy in Australian accidental celebrities. And, you know, Azaria was taken in 1980. I mean, Andy Warhol talked about 15 minutes of fame, and there are a lot of people out there, ordinary people, who hit the news and they have 15 minutes and then they go again. But there is a small number who receive so much blanket coverage for so long that we in the media look into their personal lives, and once we start shining a light on their personal lives instead of, for instance, what they did professionally or the just focusing on the event itself, we turn them into accidental celebrities. And then they often will, you know, some of these people will stay there for a very long time, like Lindy, Stuart Diver, who survived the Thredbo landslide, like Todd Russell, who survived the Beaconsfield rockfall.
And that idea of the 15 minutes of fame, I feel nowadays it can last so much longer because, of course, the story can take on a life of its own online. Do you think that's a benefit to the people at the centre of the stories, or can that be detrimental as well?
I think if you're not one who actually wants to run a campaign or have ongoing public attention, media attention, it is a very difficult world in which they're in at the moment. So Rosie Batty, for instance, Rosie's son Luke was murdered by his father in 2014, and Rosie went out to the media, surprised them when she went out, because most people don't do that. She intended to actually say, I'm, you know, asking you to respect my privacy, I need some time. But when they asked if she wanted to say something, she said, yes, I do. And she talked very powerfully about having been a victim of family violence. Rosie thought that she might have had one or two interviews and that would be it. But, of course, the community mobilised around her as well, and she became the face of family violence, and that went on for a long time. She talks about how the media was very respectful, the mainstream media was very respectful, but in an online world, particularly with social media, she suffered quite a lot of trolling.
And she's also opening up a very personal, real trauma, which I think is the side of these stories that you don't necessarily pick up on immediately, because for many, you just see their face, their story, and it can be easy to detach that from someone's true reality. What do you feel, or how do you think we can better handle the aspect of trauma within the way that we create these celebrity narratives?
I think in the media we have to constantly remind ourselves that these are not people in a fictionalised drama. These are very real people who have been through quite often horrific experiences, and they need to be given some space, some opportunity to think about how they will engage with media to tell their story. Most feel that even if they didn't want to, that they probably had no choice because the public was so curious about them that in the end they were going to have to say something. But, you know, the media has codes of ethics. You know, we need to follow those and also appreciate that a little bit of empathy within our objectivity is needed, and we need to strive for accuracy because even the smallest inaccuracy to somebody who is traumatised and already feels that their life is out of control is very, very difficult to take.
And you can forget, I think, that some people, I mean, Rosie Batty included and others that you've spoken to, they're not media trained. Their life may exist very separate from the world of media. So a lot of this side of their story becoming front page news and, you know, sort of digital fodder, it can be very overwhelming, I imagine.
Very overwhelming. And I've had to confront that myself. You know, having been in the media for 30 years, I've thought about the fact that I have myself done what we call death knocks, knocked on the doors of people who have lost somebody to see what their reaction is. I have taken vision of people who are crying and put that to air. It allows people to emotionally connect because, bottom line, the public wants these stories, shows that through the audience numbers, and has to take some responsibility as well. And then, you know, you have to consider what that means for the individual, so along the way. So I've had to confront that myself.
How do you actually deal with that? Is it, how do you approach them in a way that's respectful but also gets your job done?
You need to give them as much time as they want to tell their story. Their story is very much their own, and give them a sense of control. So that means just taking the time to listen, and if they want to ramble about that, let them, because that is going to be their best way of having some form of control. You know, I have considered myself, with my years of experience, would I ever be prepared for this level of public scrutiny, of media scrutiny? And I wouldn't. So how would you expect somebody who is an ordinary person who perhaps has never even appeared, you know, in a newspaper story about a sporting achievement to then suddenly be, you know, completely overwhelmed? Now, Todd Russell from the Beaconsfield Rockfall, he was 2 weeks underground, and he turned around to Brant Webb and said, "Do you think we made the local paper?" He came up and realised there is a wall of media here. There's cameras everywhere. This is actually now a worldwide thing. The interesting thing is he thought maybe that he'd be able to get on with his life, but that's not his experience. We keep coming back to them time and again. Once they're in we catch them in the celebrity cycle, we bring the story back to them all the time. So, you know, Todd has been asked to talk about other mining accidents. Stuart Diver was asked to comment on what Todd might be experiencing.
Wow.
One from a landslide, one from a rockfall. James Scott was asked to comment on Stuart Diver.
Here's some of Todd Russell's reflections on his initial experience with the media.
There's just no privacy. You know, you had them camping across the road, you had them camping up on the hill with them big telescopic lenses and stuff that they've got, taking photos, just trying to get an exclusive photo so they had something to put in the paper. And, you know, I thought that was, you know, quite rude. And, you know, when you're trying to spend time with the family because you've been away from them for 14 days and the thought of losing them, all you wanted to do is be with them.
When you think of the reason that media tell their stories, as you've mentioned, the listeners, the viewers, they want to embrace these stories. Do you think there are any social or cultural impacts to having these people as the face of various, I guess I would say, cultural identities? For instance, with Stuart Diver, he became this person that shows how resilient Australians can be and kind of became that sort of everyman in a way. What do you think the cultural implications are of creating stories out of these people's lives?
Look, I think for the individual, it's a great burden that they carry because Stuart deliberately didn't cry in his interviews after the landslide because 18 people had died and he didn't feel that he wanted to be crying when families were grieving and he'd lost his wife. He wanted to just show some strength through that. But, of course, he said that took a toll on him because then some people saw him as hard-hearted and others saw him as being this incredible, you know, heroic, resilient, tough man. And he said, but in private, I'm not that person. So I'm not one or the other, you know. And sometimes that comes back to people feeling like they have there's a difference between their public image and their self-image. And those two things don't always align.
And it would be really uncomfortable too. And as you mentioned with the Beaconsfield mine disaster, there's that sort of celebrity that's forced upon you, which some people really reject, but then others embrace that. They think, okay, this is my 15 minutes. I'm going to milk it for all it's worth. What do you think the difference is between the people who try to reject the fame and those that sort of take it in their stride?
I think that each person needs to be probably pretty clear on why they're speaking. And each one of the people that I spoke with take some responsibility for the fact that they did interact with the media, that they did talk publicly, for different reasons. Some to satisfy the public curiosity, and others because they wanted to warn of danger. For instance, Lindy Chamberlain Creighton, she wanted to initially warn about the dangers of dingoes. But Morecambe's had a very real reason for going to the media, and that was to try to locate their son Daniel. And Rosie Batty wanted people to understand about family violence. For some of them, then, it becomes ongoing. And in the case of the Morecambe's and Rosie Batty, they've chosen to continue speaking because they feel that there's almost now a mission for them. There's work to be done, and that they have been given an opportunity, and they are grateful for that opportunity too now, to be able to speak and to be heard. And that's one of the positive things about becoming an accidental celebrity, is that you actually are given a voice.
Yeah.
And if you want to use that voice in a powerful way, you will be heard.
Yeah, it gives you a real step up if you're wanting to take initiative around an idea, whether it's one that's forced upon you or one that, you know, you had hopes to give voice to previously. But in some instances, you do see the media taken for a ride a little bit. Now, I think back to the Chick Chick Boom girl, who, of course, she wasn't quite as strong a face as some of the names you've mentioned. She became famous for giving a false account of a shooting that she'd witnessed in King's Cross, then later admitted her story was false. The media realised it as well. When we create those celebrities, when the media creates those celebrities out of people and then it's incorrect around an incorrect story, I should say, do you think that undermines the trust that people place in media organisations when you see them taken for a ride like that?
Oh, I think it definitely does. And I think it's one of the reasons why the media has to be very, very careful with its sources. I would say there are quite a few things that were spun around each of the people that I spoke with that were not true. Now, they came from perhaps people who weren't even close friends or associates, just random people on the street commenting on what they thought. And then that spins a story around it. But it does undermine the credibility, but you will always have some people who actually actively want some level of fame and will try to use the media, just as the media will perhaps exploit survivors.
How much control do you think the accidental celebrities have over the narratives that are created around them?
Not a great deal. And the reason being is news doesn't just happen. News isn't an innate object. So news is whatever the media decides it's going to make news. So any event can essentially become news if that's what the media decides. And the media can also decide that certain events will never see news coverage. So there's a power there in the media's hands from the beginning, and that sort of sets in train a bit of a wrestle for control over how the story is then going to be told. But at the end of the day, it is the media that determines how somebody is going to be represented and how their story will be told. And the only way that some of these people tried to assert some control back, tried to wrestle some control back, was by hiring, for instance, an agent or having somebody else who acted for them with media to try to keep them at bay, so a bit of protection from the sheer numbers that were coming at them, and also by signing contracts that put in place an ability to check the story. Now, Lindy Chamberlain Creighton would say she's done a lot of exclusives over the years, and whilst she's been left in a situation where she's so well-known, she actually can't get a job, and she's needed to take paid exclusives. She says the primary reason, though, was always about protection and about being able to check the stories, and she will always put that in as a clause. Because to her now, the facts have been so skewed over the years, it's critical that every story that she has some direct involvement in is accurate. That being said, there's an awful lot written about her that she isn't even aware is going to appear.
This is some of what Lindy Chamberlain Creighton had to say about her level of fame.
I rarely go anywhere without being recognised, and often when I think I've not recognised, you'll be in a store or something, you think, oh, nobody knows being here, and you may make a purchase and go to leave and they say, thank you, Lindy. So you get a range of people rushing up to you and throwing themselves at you and hugging you and talking to you to people hiding behind shelves and peeping through them and anything in between.
Do you think that the media needs to take some level of accountability for the fact that someone, for instance, like Lindy Chamberlain-Creighton, can't work anymore? Because largely that would be an effect of the stories that people have seen about her in the news.
We do have to take some responsibility for that, and I think they find it a bit rich, so to speak, that the media will then criticise people for accepting a payment.
Mm.
In the case of James Scott and his episode, he talks about how he accepted a payment for a story to try to limit the number of people that he was speaking with, and the payment he also accepted in order to pay for some of the search costs because friends contributed, family contributed over $50,000 to try to find him.
Wow.
But he was heavily criticised for accepting money. Stuart Diver says he makes no apology for accepting money because the media is actually making a lot of money out of his story.
Mm.
And that's exactly Lindy's perspective. They've made more out of me than I've made out of them.
And it's so true. And as I'm listening to you now, I think the podcast series will have huge insights, not only for the media to reflect on, but also for the everyday punter who consumes news coverage. What were some of the biggest insights you gleaned from your interviews that you think the everyday person really needs to be aware of when they do consume these kind of celebrity-based stories?
I think whilst, you know, accidental celebrity is certainly, I mean, it's a term that was coined 20 years ago to describe people like this. Do these people feel like they actually want to be treated as celebrities? No, they want to be treated and considered to be ordinary people. And I think we have to make sure that we treat them with that level of respect. So I think at the end of the day, one of the things that people are going to find insightful is not just about media practices and behind the scenes, insights that they haven't heard before. We're all very familiar with these events, but not this part of their lives and their stories. And I think people will realise when they hear the Morecambes talk about how they would sometimes perhaps like to be able to dump their shopping trolley and go at the side of their car and jump in and drive off. They feel they can't because somebody might recognise them. So they take it back to the trolley bay. Or Lindy Chamberlain-Creighton sits in the doctor's surgery and sees an old magazine that's got her picture in it and she tries to bury it underneath something else.
Wow.
So we need to just keep remembering that these are actually ordinary people who have a level of public recognition, and not to shy away from them, not to ignore them, but to treat them, I guess, as ordinary people who have just been through an absolutely extraordinary experience.
Was that your main end goal in creating this series, that you would open people's eyes up to that side, or did you have another intention going in?
I really went into it because I'd reported on the Thredbo landslide. I was sent in the middle of the night and I reported on the first anniversary of the Beaconsfield rockfall, and I had met the Morecambes not very long after Daniel was abducted, and I'd watched a lot of other people, ordinary people, become highly newsworthy subjects, and I wondered whether they had any similar experiences. And I think what I peeled back was certainly some common themes that come through, but also how their interactions can be, you know, quite different depending on the reasons why they spoke and how they were actually then viewed by the media can often then impact how they are represented to the public and then viewed by the public.
Yeah, so true. Well, Fiona, thank you for what you've created and the stories that you've brought to life, and thank you for your time with us now as well. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.